The following message is brought to you by the Ezra Institute for Contemporary Christianity. To learn more about the Ezra Institute's mission to advance the Lordship of Christ, please visit www.ezrainstitute.ca.
Joe, it's great to be here again in your study for another episode of Cornerstones. We've been discussing the Islamic worldview, and one of the things that we wanted to touch on was regarding the growing popularity of viewing religion as a privatized matter, something that's usually reduced to your own spiritual life or time of devotions and so forth. And what's often happened is we've began to look at Islam sometimes as a privatized religion. Most people don't perceive it as influencing Western culture. But based on your understanding of Islamic theology and philosophy, what cultural implications can we expect of Islam? Is it currently influencing Western culture as we know it today?
Well, I've talked before about the fact that Islam is an attempt to synthesize a nature religion, really, a nature motive, is one way of putting it, with a cultural motive. So you have a conception of God, really, that I think is essentially pagan, pantheistic, fatalistic, pure transcendence, absolute unity. And when you think about that, and of course, I talked a bit about the mystical tradition, Sufism and so forth, you could easily consign, you could think that you could consign Islam to being just a personal, private belief, a philosophical idea about, you know, who God is. Well, how's that really going to, you know, impact the way people live and the culture if they're seeking a mystical encounter in the way that a Buddhist might? But the very powerful aspect of Islam is that it is also a cultural religion, and that transition is made in Islam by an intermediary. You have no direct contact with Allah, so you need an intermediary, whether those are jinn spirits or whether it is in the person actually of Muhammad. So Muhammad has a very special place within Islam. And in particular, his function is to make concrete, make real, sort of particularize in human experience the will of this being, Allah. So in Islam, the Quran is an eternal book that is next to Allah that reveals this being's will. Now, we can't get into how that in itself is contradictory. I mean, how can you have something eternal next to God and yet God be an absolute unity? Muslims are not allowed to ask questions about that. You simply accept that this Quran is eternal. In some respects here, you have big similarities to Plato's eternal form. So the Quran, in a sense, is like an eternal form. And Muhammad is the becoming. He's the realization of the Quran, the eternal form of the Quran, in life. So the Muslim is to imitate the life, the deeds, the ideas, even the cultural practices, the likes and dislikes of Muhammad, because he represents this eternal form, this eternal will in his own character and life. So the imitation of Muhammad becomes the goal of Islam. Actually, we used to call Islam, the primary way in which Western thinkers referred to it was Muhammadanism, because it really does deify effectively, for all cultural purposes, a human being. And the community of Islam, the Ummah, the community of Islam that are following Muhammad, world Islam, the Ummah, becomes the social order. And that social order is modeled completely, entirely, on the life and beliefs and practices of this particular man. So really, you have at one pole, two sides of the same coin. You have the one pole, you have the nature religion, the pantheistic conception of God, fate. And on the other, you have the cultural religion of Muhammad, who is the intermediary for human beings. And so you actually have a deification of the cultural aspect in this man of human life. You have the deification, actually, of a community. That is why in Islam, the advancement of Islamic culture is everything. The Ummah is concerned with the advancement of Islamic culture. And that's the nature of Islam, the spread of Islamic culture. So we see that being manifest specifically in the Sharia And in many respects, Islam is indistinguishable from Sharia. Sharia law, this is drawn from both the Quran and the Hadith, the Sunnah, the traditions about Muhammad. And in Western culture today, we see it in a number of ways. We have Sharia courts and Sharia tribunals, which are supposedly dealing with, in Britain, for example, in a manner that's supposed to be subject to British civil law, but they're dealing with family law, divorce law, marriages, disputes, and so forth, but in terms of Sharia. We have Islamic finance and Islamic banking, which is, again, an attempt to create a parallel society within a society that segregates Islamic finance from the rest of the financial world. We have halal food, which is rules about animal slaughter and diet and so forth that we're seeing increasingly across Europe. We are seeing Islamic dress codes. So you see the veil everywhere, the controversies that there have been in France, in Canada, and in Britain about the burqa and the Islamic veil and so on. These are all expressions of the cultural religion of Islam following the model of Muhammad and this absolutization of the ummah, the community. And the goal of Islam is not, in a sense, the free evangelization of the world where people get to choose, or, you know, that they hear good news as they do in the Christian gospel and decide whether they're going to follow Christ. It's about the imposition of this way of life, which you can understand when you understand the Islamic doctrine of God and you understand the Islamic idea of culture. This is the eternal way. This is the eternal form. It's embodied in Muhammad. God is pure will, pure force. So you establish Islam and the Islamic culture by force. You impose it. This al-Haq, this transcendent God, becomes one who wills al-Hijra and immigration, and the steady, whether it's by war and conquest, which is more difficult for the Islamic world today since the First and Second World War and the ending of the Ottoman Empire, certainly, there's no real ability to impose now by force. So there's other ways, cultural ways through immigration, of gradually seeing Islamic culture imposed, because that is the eternal form. That is what is represented by Muhammad, and that represents, in Islam, the will of God. It's not about knowing God or having a relationship with God or finding salvation and grace and being enfolded in the loving embrace of the triune God in the gospel, as it is in Christianity. It's about the imposition of this abstract will, and the Muslim is one who submits to that will. And that is, for the Muslim, the destiny of the whole world. And that's why you see these cultural, inescapably, this cultural manifestation in modern Western culture.
Thank you for listening to this message brought to you by the Ezra Institute for Contemporary Christianity. Please feel free to share it with friends, but do not charge for or alter the material in any way without the express written consent of the EICC. Thank you.